Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Economically Yours. I'm your host, Charmi Shah, and today I have with me a social media star. With me today, Kannan Bell. Welcome to Economically Yours. I am delighted to have you on the show. So, Kannan has a huge fan following, of course, in the field of finance on social media, be it LinkedIn or be it Twitter. He runs his own venture as well in the space of personal finance only. He's a CA. He was a part of a corporate job when he just cleared his CA, but he quit it like all other successful entrepreneurs in the world, and then he started his own venture. So, Kannan, before I talk about it, I would like you to walk my listeners through your journey, your story, and what you're currently doing. If you could please over to you. Thank you.
Sure. So what Charmi just said is like an over-bloated version of whatever I'm doing. That's obviously not true. So I am just another common man who loves writing. And I've been writing since the age of what? Like, of course, we have all been writing, but writing on social media has been something I really love. I've been writing since I was in class 9th. I started writing for a political party when I was in class 11th. So that was 2013, I guess, just a year before the general elections. So that's what I was doing. So some tweets that I used to write for that political party used to go viral. But then my parents saw a significant dip in my marks, my school marks. So they asked me to, quit that and focus on studies. Still, I couldn't study as much and I couldn't end up in any college of Delhi University. Of course, there were a few of them, like in the last categories of colleges. But then again, they're not good enough to join and, spend your time over there in the BCom honors category at least. So then what happened? I got pushed into CA because I come from a family where I have around 9 CAs, 8 CAs. I'm the 9th one. Both of my parents are chartered accountants. And when I entered that space, I was like, we just get 4% result. And the people who are sitting around me are already 10% who are answering so fast that I can't even, by the time I couldn't even understand the question. They had come up with a solution and everything. And I thought, I'm doomed. So I worked really hard and qualified all levels of CA in the first attempt. It was by God's blessing. I had the opportunity to do articleship with KPMG in their mergers and acquisitions tax practice, completed CA in 2019. Joined PwC again in the mergers and acquisitions tax practice, and it was completely a great experience. The kind of things that I'm doing today is a reflection of the work that I used to do back then. The kind of processes that I learned over there, the kind of the way you communicate with the clients, the way you write mails, everything, I learned in those 5 years of my experience of my articleship and job. But I said, kuch tufani karte hain, kuch alag karte hain. Then I thought of fintech idea, which I thought has $1 billion potential, and I'm the next billionaire. But then reality kicked in when I started speaking to customers. So I was very immature back in 2021 when I quit my job. And I thought I'll just change the world with that simple idea. But that doesn't happen. You need to do a lot of surveys. And then, as far as tech is concerned, I'm not a techie. So a techie should have been there as my co-founder. Consultants can't do work like that. So that's something I realized a year later. But then by that time, I was working offline, understanding the pain points of clients and the target customers. Got a bit of revenue as well. But again, that wasn't something I was looking at. I wasn't looking at a revenue of 1.5x my salary. I was, of course, looking at 150x, 300x of my salary. So that's why you leave job. You don't leave job just to earn what you are doing in your salary time, right? But yeah, it didn't work out because I clearly knew that tech is not my thing. I decided to pivot. I got an opportunity since I was writing on LinkedIn. So there was a big influencer who caught eye of my writing, and he said that why don't we catch up and start an edtech venture around personal finance and investing? Again, that also didn't work out. Then I got hit by a fraud, and my bank balance was about to reach, the minimum balance amount. Now, things were not as good. Like I was again starting, I again started to prepare my CV. But then what happened? I got in touch with the physics wala, and they asked me to build their finance channel. Then there were a lot of AMCs who came in. There were a lot of, you know, finance personalities, CEOs and everything who used to see how I write on Twitter and LinkedIn. And they asked me if I could research for them for these platforms and then write again for them. So this is the kind of, you know, work I started doing. And it's been rewarding so far. I just closed a deal with Grow, and now I'm speaking on their platform, which has 2 million subscribers. So that was, you know, surreal. Like 6 months back, I was distraught. I was thinking that it's the end of the world for me. And then life has its own ways to surprise you. And I'm really grateful to God for all the opportunities that he has, you know, given me. I just hope that I'm able to, you know, service them to the best of my abilities.
Right. So when did Alak Pand, like physics wala, you know, get in touch with you?
It was in December last year, 22.
Okay. So, and what about your personal venture with respect to the personal finance?
I'm not really continuing that because the thing is, it is not scalable without tech. And unless you can't scale it, there's no meaning of doing it. I wanted to do on a limited way because you can't write the best possible content unless and until you're doing it yourself. So I thought I can do it on a limited basis, but then the kind of work that I have now is so much that I don't actually have, you know, the right kind of, you know, what can I say?
Bandwidth
to go out, speak to people, understand who is fooling you, who is not fooling you. I have learned all that a lot in the last 2 years. Of course, I feel there's a gap. I should start doing that again. But the problem is bandwidth. Like it is actually a full-time job, and either you can do these things or you can do that thing. So that's the problem. That's why I decided ki nahi abhi to pehle bank balance bhari kar lu kyunki khali ho gaya tha. So that was the reason that I decided to pivot from here to here. Like, of course, I had clients and everything, and it would have been very good. But the only thing is that either you can do this or this. You can't do both at the same time.
Correct. But you mentioned that, you know, you started writing at a very early age, and, you know, that I think gave you the biggest push of your life to where you are today. So as is with writing, and, you know, it's the same in finance, that the importance of starting early. So what are your two cents on the importance of starting early? If you're talking about finance per se, when did you start and when did this knowledge kick in?
So, like, I have personally been raised by parents who used to watch CNBC Awaaz more than Star Plus or Color TV or maybe Sony TV, right? So, I have been raised listening to Anil Singhvi and journalists like him. The roundtable discussions in our family were not about, they were about politics, I won't say that. But they were more about which business did well, which didn't well, and the reasons behind them. So it was somewhere in the blood. And then my father gave me this book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, where I was in class 9th. Yeah. So I was around a 14-year-old guy then. So this thing had been, you know, nurtured in me right from the beginning. So that was one thing. And then my father asked me to open my, you know, DMAT account when I was 19 years of age. I started when I got my first stipend from KPMG, which was around 15,000 bucks, and I started investing that amount. So that was my first thing. So the thing is, like, you see, the kind of money that I could save by the time I had I was done with my articleship, it surprises people when I write that on Twitter. How can someone have 2 to 3 lakhs when they are just done with their articleship? So I always say that it's more about a habit. It's, and let me tell you, I used to spend my own money. It wasn't my parents' money that I paid for classes. Absolutely each and every penny that I spent in CA finals ever since I started studying, from travel to outside food to whatever it was, like classes or anything. My bank balance has been around 300, 400 at times during my articles. But I used to be on my own. So that's a habit which, you know, sets you up for life. You are not dependent on your parents right from the fighting, which is a good thing to do. Now, so the thing is, I won't say that, you know, if you have 500 bucks, go start an SIP. It's not like that. Invest on your skills, which can improve your learning potential. So I was investing my maximum of my time in my articleship and studies. That's why my income potential increased from 15,000, 20,000 of stipend to 80,000, 1 lakh of salary
Yeah.
within 3 years, right? So that's something you can only do with a degree, or you can only do with a skill. So focus more on building your skills in the early days, in the age of 19 or 20. But yes, the bottom line is that you need to have a habit of investing and saving right from the beginning. Otherwise, it gets very bad when you grow up and you don't have any money when you are 30. You don't have any emergency fund and you're fired. You don't know what to do. You start taking personal loans. You go to the bank and understand that they can't give you personal loans because you're fired. And you might be dependent on your relatives who might or might not give it to you. And there are a lot of problems. I have personally seen, like, my father was the go-to person in the family when it came to any financial decisions. So he has seen the ones who have done good. He has seen the ones who have done bad. So the difference was the ones who did good learned frugality right from the childhood. And the ones who didn't do as well, as far as finances are concerned, I'm not saying they did very well in life, but they were always, you know, stretched when it came to finances.
Yeah.
The only difference was they didn't learn frugality. They didn't practice frugality as such. So that was the main bottom line. That is the main bottom line about life. Understand frugality. There's a difference between misery and frugality, but have those kind of habits right from the beginning. So just like you said, that when I was 14, I used to write viral tweets. That's why I established it like a business today when I had nothing else to work on. So the thing is, you need to understand, like, the earlier you start something, the better it is. Like, To date, I regret not reading books when I was 10 years or 8 years of age. I have a friend who made it to IIM Ahmedabad just because his VARC was strong. And my VRC wasn't as strong because of the very same reason that I didn't used to read those books. So having a habit right from the childhood is very important. I'm not saying you can't turn around life later on. Of course you can, but the earlier you get it, the better it is.
Yeah. So you mentioned about investing in skills, right? Okay. The other kind of investing that I get asked upon, so I am in my mid-20s, right? So my peers are also in this age. One thing I you know, they ask me, the non finance guys, is that Charmi, you keep telling us ki boss SIP karo, equities mein dalo, is pe dalo, but we are not gonna be 20 again. So should I invest into SIP or should I invest into experiences today? Ki boss, main 30 saal baad scuba diving shayad kar nahi paungi, main sky diving nahi kar paungi, to abhi jo mere paas 1 lakh rupaye aaye hai, usse main Bali ghumne jaungi, wo 1 lakh SIP mein dal do.
No, so there's no black and white answer. There's actually an answer which lies in between. Of course, enjoy your life. There's no second thought around that. But if you don't cultivate a habit, then it's going to be a problem. So for example, if you have 1 lakh, then and you want to go to Bali, I think Bali works well within 60,000. So maybe wait for a couple of more months, save 20, 30,000 more. Invest first of all, invest that 50,000-60,000, half of that amount, and then maybe, you know, save a bit more. That will help you with delayed gratification as well. But don't splurging 1 lakh straight away on a Bali trip. But don't, I won't say that don't travel at all. So that's a very different philosophy. If you have to look at each and every money from the perspective of compounding, experiences compound, skills compound like nothing else. Not tangible and not visible on the Excel sheet. That's why we tend to discount it in our lives. So I myself travel once in 3 months at least, because my work is so consuming. I've been working continuously for the last 1 month and without traveling. Now I'm starting to I've started to feel that heat. Yaar, kitna zyada kaam. Content industry is very toxic, I would say. So I need to step out. I need to go out. So I am the kind of person who travels in every 1 to 3 months. Like 3 months is an understatement. I actually travel in every 1 to 3 months. So how can you that don't go to Bali? Invest in your equities.
Yeah.
There has to be a balance. There has to be a planning. There has to be a, you know, proper goal statement. And I'm sure if you invest in your skills rightly, rather than IPs in your initial years, you can make so much active income that you might as well, you know, enjoy both the things and never stress about anything else.
You talked about delayed gratification. That's a beautiful term that I personally love. Could you dive deep into it for my listeners, please?
Sure. So I have a CA friend who just qualified CA, and she purchased an iPhone 14. I think that's the latest one. I don't even have knowledge about iPhones. So she purchased an iPhone. She didn't have money. And she did that on a simple EMI, I guess, of 10,000 bucks. So now 10,000 doesn't pinch to any CA, right? Now what you're doing, what in the process you're doing, you are saying that I have a zero interest EMI, but understand that you would have got the discount if you would have purchased it upfront. That is one point. And the second point is these EMIs are, you know, sweet poison, is like a sweet poison, which will, you know, make you make which will end, help you make purchases which you actually don't need right now. Of course, you deserve more when you have qualified as a CA, and you rightfully deserve that iPhone 14. But then why don't you save that kind of money and buy it? So what will now I'll tell you the problem with that friend is she keeps on spending on trips and everything, and she has nothing left in her pocket at the end of the month. No investments, nothing at all. Now, this habit will continue till the age of 30, 35, 40, 45, when she'll understand that she needs to save for her retirement and for her kids' education as well. So the thing is, if you can start today, right from, you know, saving not 10,000, but 20, 25,000 per month for that iPhone and save it for 5 to 6 months, buying that after 6 months will be a right decision because it will help you save that money and not take the same thing on EMI, at least such small things. Of course, I'm not saying that save 100% for your flat if you want to purchase a home on loan. Of course, you should do that and have your planning sorted. But as far as delayed gratification is concerned, you for all these small items, luxuries, your wants, I'm not saying cut your wants, but then at least save for it and don't take a personal loan or credit card for that. And for that matter, for traveling as well.
Right. Okay, so you've been, talking about the ideal habit formation that's required with respect to discipline and things in the finance in the industry, right? What comes with habit is consistency that's required. When you started at the age of 14 writing for Twitter, writing for a political party on Twitter, you were not aware what the future would have in store for you. But
Never.
also, when you quit your job and you started full time writing on social media, be it LinkedIn or Twitter, at that point of time also you were not sure that physics wala or grow would approach you.
Never.
So what helped you maintain that consistency to write every freaking day on LinkedIn and Twitter?
So the thing is, what helped me write was, see, I love doing it. So you can't do it for a longer period of time unless and until you do it. Second thing, I had time. If I was doing my job, I didn't have I didn't I wouldn't have had that luxury to write every day. Third, I had an incentive in the form of building a personal brand as far as collecting leads for my fintech startup was concerned, which was never tech. So I was doing it for that purpose. That was my motivation. Second, I loved it. And third, I had the time. So I won't say that anyone can do it. Of course, it's very taxing to write quality stuff every day is very, very tough. And even if you have people who can, so I have hired people now who are working full time with me. Some are interns, and all of them are very beautiful people in terms of the words that they write, right? But still, I can't post that as it is. I have to do a lot of scrutiny because you see, even if I post one line wrong, people will overlook the kind of other 365
Correct.
posts that I posted last year, which have added immense value to their lives. But that's the kind of, you know, scrutiny and the toxicity we live in today. So I have to do a lot of hard work every day for myself, for my clients and everyone. So it is tough, but yes, I had the luxury to do it over and over again.
Okay. We discussed about assets of the want that you have versus the need that you might have. So when it comes to this, we also come under the purview of say buying a house or buying a car or something like that, and most people end up doing it on loan. Wherein comes the aspect of credit ratings that we have today, and a lot of things today are helping consumers improve their credit ratings today. What are your takes on those particular products that are there in the market today, and vis-a-vis the credit rating system that exists in India today? Say, for example, Cred Today is there, who helps you improve your credit rating, right? Pay your credit card on bills, and that is how you build your credit score, and that is how it helps you in the future to take a loan or something like that. On the other aspect, we have say products like Apollo Finvest, who are in the digital lending space, who do not really look at your credit score when they're giving out a personal loan. They look at other data points like, are you paying Zomato orders on time? Are you someone who has your bank balance in check? Is your Zomato address different from the bank address that you've given? Because that is where you actually stay. So these are some data points that these guys consider the modern digital fintech digital lending area. So do you really think that credit score is the only way for these traditional banks to function when it comes to loans?
See, I'll tell you what, you must have seen what has happened to Yes Bank. You must have seen
Yeah.
what had happened to ICICI Bank when that Chandra Kochar thing turned out. So it
Mm.
is very tough for banks to understand whether you will be able to pay back the loan or not. Now, even if they are, so I've worked in this industry for some time because while I was building my fintech venture, so I had clients who wanted loans and everything. So I used to help them with that to understand how the market operates. So I'd seen that, despite having a good job, despite having a good security, which they could have mortgaged, banks still didn't give them loans sometimes because they weren't sure about the end use of that money. So in a case where a person had a good property of about 60, 70 lakhs and he needed a loan of 40 lakhs, which is of course doable within the bank's bank's framework, like how much, what is the loan to value ratio. So that was within that. Now the person was working in a Big Four firm, which again offers a stable source of income. So the bank was good on that. But his father had taken a loan and he quit his job and he had that kind of home. He had some home loan or business loan, I guess. Bank was very hesitant in approving that kind of loan as well. Why? Because they don't want to see any kind of hit on their balance sheet. They have a lot of stakeholders to make happy. I think finance in Nifty constitutes 37% of Nifty 50. So it's upon the country actually, so that they can't for them to not take such kind of risky exposures. So I feel they're very fair in taking these kind of credit system and ratings and everything. Of course, sometimes you have no credit history and you might not get loans when you actually need them, but even then you are eligible, even when you are eligible. But I still think that's fine because banks need to, satisfy their criteria and make sure that nothing wrong happens.
So is banking an industry that you're bullish on?
Absolutely. Like, if I'm bullish on India, I have to be very bullish on the banking and the asset management space. So definitely I'm bullish on banking asset management, to say so.
Which other industries would you cater to when I'm talking about being bullish?
So I just, like I told, asset management, the place where you are working. So I'm sure your company is going to do good. And then discretionaries, like if you would have seen, people are becoming more and more aspirational. Now I won't talk about the delayed gratification or the depreciating asset aspect, but Lamborghini in July 22, there came an article that Lamborghini was done with all of its sales till July 2024. Sorry, till 2024. So if you see that they were already done with their sales for 2, 2.5 years, they had a waiting period of 18 months for their next sales. So you see, that's one thing. And if you look at Hero MotoCorp sales, which sells affordable bikes and everything, sales are approximately 10% down from the levels it was in March 2019. So you see, the discretionary spend is going up. Definitely people are becoming more aspirational, but as far as the non-discretionary spends are concerned, they are not doing well. Companies like, again, no investment advice, please, anything discussed over here. Stock scripts, I don't hold any of them. If I hold, I'll tell you. But if you look at companies like Hindustan Unilever, they're also not reporting very handsome volume growth in terms of the numbers they are selling. So you look at the balance sheet, compare it with the volume growth that used to happen back then. Of course, the sales numbers are improving and it doesn't show that because they are basically able to pass on the pricing pressure. They're just passing on the pricing pressure. They're not selling more number of units. Of course, they are, but at a very slow pace. So non-discretionary is something which is not very handsome, at least right now. The rural demand, as we say, is picking up, but it doesn't seem so in some of the companies' numbers. And then if you look at discretionaries, they are doing very good.
Yeah, I mean, talk about discretionary spending. We have Apple opening stores in India. I mean, honestly, I personally do not. So I think when 10, 15 years back, owning an Apple product was a status symbol. Today, as we discussed, given the EMI structure and everything, Apple is no longer a status symbol. I think it's just the ease of the product and the ecosystem that Apple provides for which people run
Absolutely.
after it. Right?
Absolutely.
So People are bullish on India, and I think this is one topic that's constant across the podcast that I've been, doing recently. But again, talking about that, when it comes to being bullish on India, we automatically relate to the fact that people will create more wealth, and more wealth would mean more taxes to the government. Now, talking about taxes, we have two regimes that have come in from this particular FY. Personally, I am not a fan of the dissection that's happened, but of course, I'd like to hear it out from a CA, your views on that.
The thing is, the only problem that I find with the new regime is that it doesn't incentivize people to invest in ATC instruments. And there are many people whom I know have only ATC savings by the time they're 550. So that's from a psychological standpoint, it's somewhat wrong, I believe. And I'll tell you, like, I don't have many deductions, and I'll probably be better off taking the new regime myself. But that won't stop me from making my PPF investment. That won't stop me from making my ATD contribution. Like, I'd still be better off because my income suits the new regime, despite taking these 2 lakh kind of deductions. But still, I'll go with the new tax regime because I'll have lesser tax outgo in the new tax regime. So even if you're opting for the new tax regime, that shouldn't stop you from making the investments that suit you, either equity in the form of ELSS or PPF in the form of ATC or other instruments that are already there. It completely depends on your choice, but it shouldn't stop you from making investments. That's the bottom line, which have a higher lock-in because people, whenever they have liquidity, they can simply right swipe these days and sell equity shares and spend all of that money on places where they don't need. So have that thing in mind. You just don't be disillusioned by the fact that you don't have to make any investments right now because new regime is suiting you. Still do that, even if then choose which regime is suiting you. Don't plan investments in a way that new will be good. Plan investments first and then choose the regime.
Makes sense. Right. So planning investments, talking about investments in general, markets have been volatile for quite a long time now. And that, given the interest rates ecosystem also with the RBI, we've seen that FDs have started giving good, attractive rates today. Having said that, do you think that it's an ideal time for people to lock in some of their money in FDs today, given the attractive interest rates, or equities is the way?
See, it completely depends on your choice of portfolio. Like, if you have to talk about equity, then equity is absolutely a different question. Do with equity what I have to do with equity part of my portfolio. And then I'll do with the debt side of portfolio what I have to do with the debt side of the portfolio, which might include PPF, which might include FDs, which might include debt funds or target maturity funds or Bharat Bond, whatever, gold, if I have to that. So that completely depends on the side of portfolio. There's no, I can't be giving blank, one.
No,
side.
But the question is more with respect to, say, now that indexation benefits have also been gone, right? They've been scrapped off from debt MFs. So having said that, is it now better to stop allocating your SIPs into debt MFs and put it into FDs or...
Completely speaking from a tax standpoint, I'll tell you, if FD is giving 8% and even if debt fund is giving 8%, I'm completely talking about tax perspective. Still, a debt fund might be better because in most cases, you are supposed to pay taxes when you actually have that kind of, you actually have booked that kind of gains in your account and you have that money. Whereas what happens in FD is, even if you don't have the liquidity to the interest that you have earned, you still have to pay taxes out of your pocket. So from a cash flow perspective, it becomes better to go with debt funds. Of course, they come with slight risk. They come with the volatility and everything. Choose that. Of course, you need to understand those products before investing in them. But just from a taxation standpoint, cash flows are still better if you look at debt funds. And of course, if they are providing the same kind of returns.
Okay. While we're discussing about the tax regime, for some reason, of course, I visualized our FM and her speech, and with that visualization came her very recent announcement on Finfluencers that they have to put some kind of regulatory checks on financial influencers these days. So I want to understand from you, what do you think you are doing different than most financial influencers today who probably do not understand one percentage about what finance is, but they are there creating reels on Instagram, right? And how do people like me who, you know, look up to safe influencers today differentiate whom to look up to and whom not?
So I'll tell you, if you look at, so there was just one headline and people went mad on Twitter and about that finance minister has said that influencers are a rising concern in our country.
Yeah.
She said was that if three, four of them are good, there's 7-8 of them who are not doing the good stuff.
Right.
So when she was talking about those 7-8, she further mentioned that there are certain apps like loan fraud apps on which they're working with the Ministry of IT, RBI, and the concerned regulators. And then she was probably talking about those forex trading apps and everything and the loan fraud loan apps. So if someone is promoting, say, a zero-sum game or maybe, you know, I won't even say a zero-sum game, but I'll say something that is fishy, that's something you should, you know, that's something you need to be wary about. And as far as the other finance influencers are concerned, there are certain finance influencers in India who are the most followed finance influencers in the world, not just India, like a couple of them. So, for example, if I won't take names, otherwise it might some other kind of thing. But there's an Instagram influencer, finance influencer, who has the most following in the entire world as far as finance is concerned. The gap that they're bridging is very awesome. So tell me, Charmi, when you had just 5,000 bucks a month to invest, who was there to support you? An investment advisor would have come to you, but then he would have said, my fees is 35,000, 40,000 for one consultant. And he's fair. Like, if I have to be an advisor today, I won't cater to someone who has 5,000 because I have a home. I have 1 lakh plus GST of fees to pay to SEBI. So I completely understand. I have salaries to pay, I have compliance fees to pay and so many things. So I won't cater to someone who is planning to save just 5,000 a month. So you see, if you look at investment advisors over there, so they will cater to millionaires. If you look at mutual fund distributors, they'll be more inclined to sell you schemes which attract more commissions, right?
They're generally
more biased towards that. And fine, they do have a very good role in the society, to say so. I'm not disrespecting them.
Yeah.
Saying that, if you look at insurance advisors, have you ever come across any relative who comes to your place selling a term insurance? I'm sure not. They're mostly selling ULIPs, they're mostly selling endowment plans, which you might need as well. Like ULIP is something I can say no one needs, but endowment plans, so if you're done with your PPF, if you're done with everything and you don't have any debt instruments to put your money and you don't want liquidity, then it's still fine and you're a spendthrift that you'll take out money and endowment policies help you with that. So that is still a relevant product for a very limited audience, but not for everyone. Do they sell that? Do they sell term insurance, health insurance? Are they so hell-bent on selling that? They're hell-bent on selling endowment and ULIPs. Why? Because that makes them more commission. If you are paying 2 lakhs in premium, they might get 40 to 50,000, 80,000 in first year premium. And then they continue to get 2 to 5% of every year's commission. And if you look at other kind of advisors, somewhere or the other, it is a commission-led industry. So if you look at bridging the gap, the finance influencers, the three, four of them who are good, what finance minister said, they're actually bridging some kind of gap. But yes, as audience, we need to be wary about the kind of products that they're endorsing, the kind of information they're giving. Just have that from an awareness perspective. Do your own diligence, because ultimately it's your money. If they tell you something good, it's your gain. If they tell you something bad, it's your loss. So ultimately, yours, your money, your gain, your loss. So you need to be very diligent about the processes that they tell you. For example, if I have to, what thing I am doing differently, I won't say that I am, you know, the supreme creator and everything. The only thing that I have, you know, imbibed as a process in myself, once I promoted a product which wasn't, you know, really very, I would say, very safe. Then a friend said, bhai, isko mat kar, isme ye wale risk hai. Then I understood, yaar, haan, ye baat sahi hai. Ye kahin na kahin mujhe back of the mind pata the, but mereko ye nahi karna chahiye tha. I did it long back, like 5-6 months back from today. then that brand constantly comes to me and I clearly say them, no, yaar, mere ko aapke saath kaam nahin karna hai. Clear, I'm very clear on that. Because aisa nahi hai ki wo log badmash, but mujhe kya pata kal ko unka bhi bald ho jaye. So I never know when they can go bust, and if the people who have invested on my advice will get money back or not. So I'm very clear that back of the mind, I might have that bias ki paisa mil raha hai and I have to take care of it. But no, that's not supposed to done. Now I work only with brands which have sustainable integrity and who are not selling any kind of finance product per se, which can land people in trouble. For example, if someone is selling term and health insurance, they might feature upar niche, but I would have, you know, analyzed that person's ability, that he's the right kind, brand is the right kind of brand which can actually advise them better than I can, or maybe something what I will myself do. Then only I'll attach myself with that kind of brand. Otherwise, it's a clear no to all the finance product sellers. No, I'm not going to work with them. There was a SEBI registered research analyst friend who came to me and said that maybe we can work on a revenue share model. I would have been pleased to do that. He's a friend and everything. But then what if he picks some wrong shares and money? I'm very clear that I'm not supposed to do that, and I'm not supposed to do that at all. So I am only going to cater to brands which are harmless to people. Like, what if I'm asking someone to subscribe to a co-founder app, like where they can find their co-founders? How can that be harmful? I'm telling someone to subscribe to an AI product and test it for 1 month. How can that be harmful? That is fine. But as far as any finance product is concerned, I have to be like very, very sure that this can't harm the person, at least.
Right. You mentioned AI products. Do you think AI will disrupt the finance industry and the content industry? Like, because not even the content industry.
Not
why would you say
as far as the finance content industry is concerned, not at all. So I'll tell you, if I have a research report and I'll ask ChatGPT to come up with a Twitter thread on that. Look at the quality of Twitter thread that comes, and then look at the quality of Twitter threads that I write. There's a lot of difference. Not even a content writer, a normal content writer from a BCom honors background might be able to write that, because they have not been doing fundamental analysis all their life. I have been doing that for the last 6-7 years. So I understand what people want to read in the first tweet. I understand what are the kind of points they're looking for, what are the kind of points they really need to know. And that's how I structure a thread, and that's how it goes out. So that's not something which ChatGPT as of today understands. Might happen 4 to 5 years later, I don't know. But as of now, I don't.
How do you read an annual report? How do you break it down?
So, first of all, of course, what we jump into is the numbers, but then Screener is a good tool for that. The jury is a good tool for that. I do that using that. As far as then I look at the notes as well. I look at the management discussion and analysis. I look at some points of the directors and chairman's address to the shareholders. Then the most important part, I would say, is giving scrutiny to the related party transactions, because that's where all the fishy things lie, if there are to be in a business. And majorly, it's about whatever is given there. And there's nothing as such, like look at the statement of changes in equity, look at related party transactions, look at cash flow statement. If there's anything, wrong over there, then once you're done with all these things, you can again come back to the ratios and see if they are deteriorating or they're improving over the years. And it's not just about annual report. It's actually about how the promoter is, reflecting him outside the media. If he's too flashy and everything, you need to be careful. If he's silent and just working, without making any noise in the media, and he's working silently in his factory, that's probably a good sign.
I think another important aspect, and I think this will be the the last parameter that we touch upon, would be risk and reward. I mean, after all the scrutiny and diligence, even before you invest into any asset class, another aspect that comes into place is the risk that you have to take. Okay, I understand that you mentioned that we are all bullish upon India. Even I myself am bullish, and anyone and everyone, be it a naive investor as well, would say that India is the place to bet on today. But what are certain macro risks that you are looking at from an India perspective?
Like, see, there's a lot of population to cater to. Like, how will we be able to employ 140 crore people? Of course, we don't have to employ 140 crore people, but whoever are within that age category bracket, that is one thing. And then you see the rising difference between the rich and the poor. Just like I told you, I just gave you an example about Lamborghini and Hero MotoCorp. So that's again a risk. And then there's a level of risk attached to the macros as well. Like if the macro is not good, where whom will we export to? And bunch of challenges like that. So that's of course a challenge that we need to cater to. And of course, no matter how much we say that we'll rise to $5 trillion and everything, but the GDP growth should reflect at least from financial year 24 and 25 for us to be able to say that Nifty will reach 50,000 in so many years. Because it won't happen unless and until these numbers grow.
Perfect. Kannan, I think this has been a well-rounded conversation with respect to personal finance. lots of points we touched upon, lots of I think we missed, but I think that's about it when it comes to personal finance. You can't cover it in a 40-minute podcast. It's just impossible. So thank you for that conversation. I'll just end it with my quick signature rapid fire round.
Sure.
Okay, so the first word being personal finance.
It's very personal.
Okay, insurance versus investment.
Keep it separate.
Okay, influencers in India.
Doing a good job, but take a word of caution if you're listening to them and advise and implementing their advice.
Okay, startup ecosystem in India.
Very bullish.
Okay, and the last one being Kannan Bell.
Finance guy.
Perfect, perfect. Great, Kannan. Thank you so much for coming on Economically Yours. It was an absolute honor to have had done this episode with you.
Thank you so
Thank
much. It was a pleasure.